Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by a pair of face-off legends, T.D. Erlin and Joe Nardella, as we talk about breaking news. On Friday night at the IMLCA convention, Inside Lacrosse's Kevin Brown reported that there had been ongoing conversations about multiple potential changes to rules at the Faceoff X, one being reducing the shot clock after a faceoff win from 80 seconds to 60 seconds, kind of emulating what the PLL enacted in the summer of 2023, reducing the shot clock after faceoff wins from 52 to 32. And then second, and potentially, and in my opinion, much more significantly, outlawing the clamp. So we've got TD and Joe here to talk about what all this means. But first, fellas, thank you so much for joining us. And second, what have you heard? TD, I know that you've been on this. What is the, you know, to be clear, this is a conversation. This isn't a rules committee actually, you know, making progress toward changing something. But that being said, what have you heard?
So Terry, thanks for having us on. We appreciate you fitting us into the busy schedule, especially on today. It was a little hectic. But yeah, so I was on my way up to Canada for our game this weekend, and just phone starts blowing up and you just quickly see it's all face off people, lacrosse parents. I'm like, this is just, I was like, it's convention week. I was like, this is just not going to be good. So I sit down and then kind of go and catch up through social media and just see the biggest proposal that stuck out to me was no clamping allowed anymore, which it's like, if you take that away, you're basically everyone just doing the same move. And I was, there's obviously a lot to unbox with that, but I just, when I saw that, I was just more of a, here we go again. It's like, there's another thing, you think it's fixing, everything's in a better spot, and then it's, oh, got to change something else again. So that was, that's kind of where I'm at with everything. I'm still trying to catch up probably as much as everyone else is. I mean, it's still kind of brand new with everyone was just saying.
Joe, how about you? What have you heard?
You know, I've been in those convention rooms for 4 years, and I know faceoffs is always a point of contention. It's always seems to be something that gets scapegoated out by teams that either don't recruit well or coaches have an issue with it, or they don't have athletic faceoff guys. So I think the core of the problem is that recruiting and coaching, and that's not to take like a stab at anybody, but I do think the teams that invest in coaches learning the position, studying it, are pretty effective at all three levels of college. You know, I do think that removing the clamp would be really, really drastic. I think that the PLL is pretty much given college a blueprint for how to not erase face-off guys' impact, but like limit the impact. I mean, you see TD had a great year. Trevor was like over 70% and they had a losing record. So I do think the shortened clock is a pretty strong solution, as well as the wing guys being closer, the ball starting up higher and making the cadence quicker. And I would be very curious to see a stat on how many tie-ups there are out of whatever percentage of faceoffs that had happened in the PLL, because I feel like the faceoffs happen pretty quick, the ball's out pretty quick, and teams are playing offense even quicker than ever now. So I really think, like, if there is any changes, they should just do what the PLL is doing. And I think that was a great thing the PLL did from the inception, was lean on faceoff guys and experienced people to not only educate them and create the rules, but educate the refs as well.
So I think there are two parts of this conversation. The first is, what technically, what does it mean to remove the clamp, and how does it fit relative to some of the other decisions that have been made with respect to changing faceoff rules? But the other part of the conversation, I was going to save it for last, but I actually think that now we need to kind of tackle it first, is it's just the way my brain works. I struggle with talking about solutions unless you are very specific about the problem that is trying to be solved. And when it comes to the Faceoff X, there are at least two primary problems that, in my opinion, are very different that are trying to be solved. And I actually think that the PLL tried to solve a third separate different problem. So I think, and I don't have a starting point. I engaged with a couple of pretty legendary faceoff guys in John Glennon and Brendan Fowler on this on Twitter on Friday night. But I think that to the extent that there was a starting point, it was probably like between 2005 when Kyle Harrison won the Tartan as a midfielder who took faceoffs, and there were other guys on Johns Hopkins' team, Lou Braun being a faceoff specialist, and I think Stephen Pizer took a few faceoffs that year as well. So I think there was like a little bit of like kind of the – that was still within the ideal realm of what middies who take faceoffs were supposed to be. And then in 2006, and then especially in 2007, when Alex Smith was so instrumental in leading Delaware to the Final Four, that is when the coin started to turn a little bit. There was this kind of diaspora, so to speak, of really highly specialized and highly technical faceoff guys, a lot of whom came out of the MIAA that year and kind of went to Towson, Yale, Virginia, Maryland, etc. So they were all over the country. And then by 2009, that was kind of, and this is what I tweeted about, like that was when the photo of Cornell against Princeton came out where John Glenn was grabbing the ball with his hand. And I think that's when, at the end of the decade, the goal was this position or this maneuver is too hard to officiate and cheating is too prevalent. And then over the course of the next couple years, as faceoff coaching in high school became, you know, a little bit more kind of widespread, and whether it was North Jersey or Long Island specifically, like you started to see more faceoff guys come out, and the disparity between the have and the have nots. It's one thing when 10 programs have really good faceoff specialists that can win 60% or above. It's another thing when like 20 or 30 do, and then the other 40 or 50 don't, and then all of a sudden like you've got 20 guys that are at 62% and over, and then basically the rest of Division I is at 52% or below. And I think that was when this second issue of disproportionate outcome on the game started to become prevalent, right around that 2013-2014 window. And then with the PLL, the reduced short clock was the issue of essentially quick restarts and subbing. And that's kind of a different tactical, you know, what's more amenable to TV thing. I apologize for the rant or the long preamble, but my question for you guys is, because you have to feel like you've been picked on for a decade, what do you think, and when you ask the guys who are picking on you, why are you doing this? What do they say? What problem are they trying to solve? Joe, because you've been in the room a few times, the floor is yours.
I believe the issue is exactly what you're saying, the disproportionate results in games surrounding teams that have, you know, abnormal or extremely high face-off rates, and them just having the ball, sometimes taking the air out of the game, and one team feeling like they're playing uphill against a team with a dominant draw guy. I think that right there is the main issue. I know some coaches have an issue with the clamp because they say it's the only place on the field that you actually can do that, and it's not a lacrosse play. However, goalies clamp the ball to pull it back into the crease. Defenders rake the ball to scoop it up. But I think that's the main one for me.
TD, how about you? What do you think coaches, generally speaking, are trying to solve?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it on. One of the points you touched on was too, it's like, first I want to know like the issue is they're trying to solve. If it's a guy being too dominant, like tell us. If it's a guy, like what is the issue trying to solve? Cause I feel the rules change is also, sorry, my roommate just walked in. He was also our former face-off guy before I got here.
Does he have a strong opinion on the clamp?
You're pro clamp, right?
Pick and pops.
He's pick and pops. He said,
I don't know what
he
that
thought
is.
That's what he thought a pinch and pop was a pick and pop until like a year ago.
Until you corrected.
They have different names for things in Canada.
Yeah. it's an easier country to get along. But kind of, I want to know, one, what rule do they want to fix? Two, consult and face off guys. Like, you don't just like making up these rules without really a backing of knowledge. And it's no offense to the coaches. Like, they know 1,000 times more about lacrosse than I do. Right. But ask us, like, what is the fix? Because right now, my personal opinion is, like, there's so much cheating going on because the ball is just in the throat of everyone's stick. Everyone's leaning. Like, if I get reps against college kids, they're basically touching the ball already. And it's, like, those are issues to fix in on its own. But, yeah, and I think there's kind of a disdain for it's, like, the haves and the have-nots. It's, like, you can't recruit a good face-off guy and you get upset because certain factors that come along with that. And I think Joe talked to it. It's, like, the coaches that invest time, right? Like, if you have a coach that invests a lot of time and he's really good at recruiting midfielders, like, that's the same thing. Like, he's going to keep getting good midfielders. Like, Cornell has produced great attackmen. Like, no one complains. They've had arguably, like, the best attackmen in the country for the last decade plus, you know? So it's like, where the coaches, I think, and it's not, like, an everyone thing, but I think it's, like, instead of trying to change the problem that we don't even know what it is because we haven't been told, what is the problem? So identify it. And then how can you look inward and like, how can you learn more about the position before trying to change?
And I think that point is reflective of why there have been so many attempted solutions. I don't think that there is a singular consensus around what the problem that is trying to be solved actually is. Like, for instance, I talked to a Division I head coach who was at one point a member of the rules committee, and he had special disdain for the prevalence of face-off specific heads. He's like, you know, it's kind of the only position on the field where A, you go through so many heads over the course of a year, and B, the way in which the head is designed is so specific, and it, you know, especially after it takes a face-off, it can't be used to do other lacrosse moves. And, he, you know, his point of view was more around access than it was about tactics. I'm not going to endorse that point of view, but at the very least, it represents a fourth problem, right? And I think that, again, is just kind of like the compounding nature of moving the goalposts and why this has been something that has never been settled. I started working at Inside Lacrosse in 2007. The rules are allowed to change every 2 years. I mean, it's crazy to me that, TD, you were in college for the 2019 and then subsequently the 2021 seasons. Is it fair to say that, like, the 2019 and early part of 2020 was, like, the best that the rules and consistency of officiating was, and then because they changed the mechanic because they didn't want the ref to breathe the player's air, presumably, in 21 to move away, that's like, it actually kind of started a little bit of a backslide over the course of the last two seasons?
Oh, 100%, because that was kind of the step closer to the PLL where the biggest issue, and I think Joe can agree, leaning is a huge issue if the ball is directly in the throat of people's heads. That's where they want to get the ball for any move you perform. So if you're leaning in the throat of your stick, just with how these heads like are designed, and even any head, if you use it and you get it leaned in the throat, like, it is an incredible advantage. In the PLL, if you move the ball to the top of the head, if you're leaning, it really doesn't matter because there's so much more distance to go, and like, there's just less cheating because you have to get more of the ball. You have to perform more instead of just getting it in the throat of your sticks, getting in these long tie-ups that waste so much time. In 2019, in the beginning of 2020, the refs were in there. They made sure everyone was straight up and down, and they made sure the ball was not in the throat of anyone's stick. And I thought that was kind of the peak of face-offs, just in terms of when I was playing at Yale, we would get in 40-goal games a lot of times. There was under five violations. There was probably under two violations in most of those games we played. And when we played Penn State, I think there was two violations and the final score was 21-17. Like, because guys aren't cheating, guys aren't rolling in because you have that set, the ball's in the middle of your head, and like, you're just not going to cheat it, right? You're not going to roll in and then you don't have one ref being like, he's early. It's like, he can't be early every time. It's the same for each. I agree. That was kind of the pinnacle. And then when you kind of moved away from it, and then, I mean, you give someone an inch, they're going to take a mile. Like, you're in a game and it's, this guy's cheating, I'm going to cheat. And then that just kind of compounded, I think, to get us where we are now.
Joe, I mentioned that I think this is a two-part conversation. So let's start a little bit talking about what the clamp actually means. So Kevin Brown wrote this story, reported for Inside Lacrosse, and when he originally drafted it, this section was just one sentence. The discussion is also about removing or outlawing the clamp from the game. And I made him expand on it because I, in my role, did not understand what is a face-off if there is no clamp. So just, can you answer the question? Like, what is a face-off if there is no clamp?
I really think it's just a ground ball, honestly. And both guys are just kind of swiping at it. I know sometimes growing up and being in and the NLL now, and a lot of our Canadian teammates talk about how you're not allowed to clamp and box, and the stick starts between the legs. And really, it's kind of a different tactical approach. But both guys are essentially swiping at the ball. I really think it just becomes a ground ball battle starting in the middle of the field if they do take clamping out. And what they're like, who knows what they're defining clamping as? Is right. that coming all the way down on the ball? Is it getting halfway over and pulling it out? So, yeah, more clarity there would obviously be appreciated. But I completely agree and believe that it essentially would eliminate faceoffs.
You made the point earlier that defenders rake ground balls backwards. And to me, I don't understand what the distinction between a rake and a clamp is. If it's withholding the ball from play, I think that's already been solved by virtue of the way that it's been defined that you can't take a step with the ball in the back of your stick. So I think that just from like a rules writing standpoint, there's going to be a problem in defining exactly what, quote, outlawing the clamp is, unless it goes so far as to say you are not allowed to touch the ball with the back of your stick, in which case I can't understand how that wouldn't also be applied everywhere else on the field. And if you're going to say that you can't rake a ground ball, I mean, the effect that's going to have on the game in terms of open play is going to be 10x the effect that it has on the faceoff position. And you know, again, if you're trying to attack it logically, like maybe there's some gray area here that I'm not identifying that actually can be defined black and white, but that's the way I see it. So I think that this is the type of conversation that from a rules writing standpoint has the potential to expand far beyond the scope of the conversation so far.
Correct, because then we're talking again about goalies when the ball is near the crease. Are they not allowed to clamp down on it? Is there going to be more rebounds and more goals? Is defense now harder?
How, staying with you, how significant is this change relative to outlawing the knee-down motorcycle grip and mandating the standing neutral grip?
I think it's light years past that in terms of like what it means for the position. I really do think that we're in a great, like, I think we're in a good place right now with faceoffs. I know some of the cheating gets, you know, funneled into college a lot more, but like in the PLL or NLL, when the refs are right there and they have the clear lines of where you have to set your stick up or touch their foot, like you can't get away with anything. Because those guys are on top of you, and I feel like that's what the refs need to do again is be right there in the mix to ensure that we're getting fair face-offs and the ball's getting out and into play. And that just makes for a better game, a better TV product, and I think just more fun lacrosse.
Titi, what do you think, both in terms of how substantial the rule change would be, and then to build on top of that, what was interesting about the transition from knee down moto grip to standing neutral grip was some guys, their numbers declined significantly. Others stayed the same. How strong do you think the correlation is going to be between faceoff guys who are good at facing off now and how good faceoff guys will there still be specialists? Are they still going to be the same players for the most part as the guys who are good at facing off when in a world where they're allowed to clamp?
To agree with Joe, I think knee down to stand up, it's still very similar in terms of, like, it's just a different way to look at it, but you can perform a different moves. It's just a different way of doing it. And I think if you look at it, most of those guys that even if they struggled, because I think a large part of it was you implemented a rule in a time that is unprecedented in the country's history. So you couldn't go out and practice. So like that made for sloppier face-offs. Guys had more time adjusting from the knee down to stand-up change. But if you look at it, a guy who I worked with, like Jacob Fopp at Syracuse, he didn't have a great year right away, and he wasn't allowed to get reps with anyone. He weren't allowed to see anyone. And then he adjusted the next year and was a borderline All-American. He was 60-plus percent. He was great for Syracuse in an incredible schedule. So I think guys that are good are going to figure out how to be good. They're just successful no matter what it is. Yeah, it might take time. It might look different. But I think those guys are going to be good no matter what. I think, just as Joe said, as a ground ball in the middle of the field, if that changes, basically the guys are doing the same thing. It then just becomes a ground ball. And opposed to in a face-off now, you have just 10 varieties of moves, right? You can clamp. You can get into like different rotations, counters. There's so many things to do. Now it's just everyone's doing the same move. So if someone is just better at you than one move, what are you really going to do to counteract them? What if you – that guy – there's still going to be guys that specialize and, I think, train in it regardless of what it is. But if he's just better than you now at one move, then you're just going to lose that every time. I think it's just going to be more dominant than before. Like, you have a guy that's just good at it. He's just going to keep doing it more and more. I think the fix, really, kind of as Joe said, it's with the PLL kind of gave him a blueprint. Like, you can shorten the shot clock to 60. That's still plenty of time. It's, I mean, I've been in games when pre-shot clock against UMBC, we won. I think we were 23 or a four off 24, 25. And at Albany, we were number one in the country and lost 11-8, like, to a UMBC team that didn't make the Americas tournament. Like, they played great in other aspects of the game. So I think in terms of there's other ways to look at the issue that we're fixing, but it's not going to create this, oh, no one's going to be dominant. It's going to be 50-50 down the middle anymore. Like, if you're just doing one move and someone's better than you at one move, there's now no way to counteract that.
So one of the elements of this that I do think is important is if the reduction in cheating is the goal, Joe, can you see this as being more easily officiated and or less able to cheat at, I guess, is the right way to phrase that?
I would say no, because to TD's point, like, yeah, the guys who are the strongest, most physical, and toughest on ground balls are going to be the guys that teams choose to use. And playing an indoor where every single guy on the floor is tough, physical, and good at ground balls, people are grabbing each other, they're holding each other. I just think there's going to be more BS on ground balls, and we're going to see a lot of loose ball violations, especially in college, where they call it tighter than they do in the pros.
It's actually a really good segue into my next question, which is, So you mentioned that in box, you're not allowed to clamp, but you are in the NLL. Is that right?
Correct.
So
I believe in junior, like junior you can, but I don't think in youth you can.
Oh, okay. Well, that was what I was going to ask. So do you know anything about that world, that ecosystem? Like, what does it mean to not be able to clamp in box, and how much does that translate for those guys as they get older?
I don't as much, just because the version of box lacrosse I've always played, both in the States and now in the NLL, it's always allowed it. From what I've heard, you know, these guys just telling kind of campfire stories, is that it's a lot of the ball getting mucked around, people getting checked, and like it definitely does create more of like a chaotic game. But like, they find that it's kind of silly because it's not really a natural play on the ball when the stick's between your legs and you're kind of just swiping at it.
Yeah, and I think, sorry to interrupt, but they've talked to me about it, is same thing as Joe, is like just hearing stories. In box, there's, right, you have four wings that are right there, so it's a huge muck-up, which is, I don't even know how it would look on field in comparison, and they'll talk about all the times, it's like, yeah, you can only go left on certain refs, but then this guy, you can get away with this, and that, just there's no... Like, everyone defines it differently, so there's no clear cut of what actually are you allowed to do. It's kind of like, all right, we'll see what we can get away with.
There is a move where you essentially put the face of your stick over the ball, correct?
Correct.
What's that called? Correct.
The reverse face clamp or reverse clamp, yeah.
How frequently do either of you use that in games? Like, less than 5% of the time?
I used it against the long pull, but I don't use it against other draw guys.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I know Trevor's used it a decent amount, like in the PLL this summer facing non-draw guys. I tried it once against the Redwoods in the game that TD got hurt. The ball went too far back. I got hit, and they scored a goal, so I've never tried it again in a game.
As you understand it, would that be a viable path forward for this?
It could be. I mean, I think it's way messier when you're trying to clamp with the front of the stick. The sticks get even more mangled. There's less, like, directing of the ball. It's, I think, when two people are trying to do it at once, it almost becomes like the old face-offs of down whistle in the John Glenn days, where guys are jamming, their hands are close to the ball, both guys aren't really on it, but they're trying to wedge over it for position. I think the ball just gets stuck in there if both guys would be trying to do that. So I don't see it as a solution, but if they're saying you can't clamp or use the back of the stick, I guarantee that's going to be the first thing a lot of guys point to. Oh, well, I can clamp with the front of my stick then.
Yeah.
TD, what's your point of view on that as a viable move, as opposed to just swiping and trying to get the ball out into loose space? Is it a better outcome, you think?
I think it's just same thing Joe said, just because the gray area of everyone will immediately try to do it, and then it would just get so ugly where hands will get in there, you go into jams, and I think it honestly, just as Joe said, it relates back to those days where everyone's hands are on the ball, they start trying to, like, use their hands and grab the other guy's stick. It's really tough, too, because – and with that motion, it's just, like, you're both going over top of the ball. It just – I think it would just get really sloppy, just as Joe was saying.
But as you're saying, like, if there's no clamps, are guys just going to start trying to jam each other's hands and wrists?
Yeah.
Right?
And then you end up just kicking the ball out. That becomes the best option.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody listening to this is, it's not lost on them that you guys are about as biased as it can be from the standpoint of, like, you have a point of view, you have benefited from it by virtue of your work that you have put in, the success that you have found on the field, and the way that you've been able to develop careers for yourself. But one of the things that I do think is very important is that not many folks have a better point of view on the fact that you're not just representing yourself. I mean, for all intents and purposes, why do you care about college lacrosse rules? You're done with college. You're not going to play in college again. But the difference is that you guys coach a ton of young kids who have decided that this is their pathway toward playing college lacrosse and that this is what they've invested their time and energy into. And to the point of being picked on, I have a lot of sympathy for a 14-year-old who has been facing off for 5 years and started as a knee-down double overhand guy because that was what was explained as the best way to do, and then made the transition to standing neutral grip, and now is hearing that, you know, over the course of the next 6 months, all the skill that he's tried to develop over the last 3-4 years is about to potentially be erased again. Joe, what do you say to the young kids that you coach who are freaking out because they don't know what the future holds?
You know, I say, like, number one, it's a proposal. We still have
it's not even a proposal. It's not a proposal. We should be clear about that.
All right.
It's just a conversation. Gotcha. So it's like, and this is, I'll do my best to clarify exactly what this means from, like, a procedural standpoint. So there is no formal relationship between the IMLCA, which is the coaches association, and the NCAA rules committee, which is also going to be the group that makes the decisions. And they are going to meet in June. They met last summer, and the big outcome from that was a lot of replay utilization. And I should just say, because I don't know how many people listened to my comments over the summer, I think that's going to be a terrible disaster, but we'll leave that aside. It's not really related to this. So that's a panel of either 8 or 9 folks, a combination of athletic administrators and coaches that represent all 3 divisions. And they put forward proposals that then get approved by a higher level panel within the NCAA. The Coaches Association is responsible for essentially garnering the consensus opinion of the coaches that is supposed to inform the rules committee's decision making. Does it? Sometimes. It certainly doesn't always. And despite the fact that it's been reported that the vote to remove the clamp and or reduce the shot clock after faceoff wins from 80 to 60, I don't know whether the vote was separate for those two, was like 51 in favor and 13 opposed. Despite that being a relatively substantial number, I've been around this long enough and I've seen the disassociation between what's happened in December and what's happened the following summer. This is not a foregone conclusion. So that's just the first thing that I would say to reiterate your initial point.
Gotcha. And so to that point, I would say, for one, it's just a conversation. For two, anyone who trains with me, TD, and, you know, I've reminded everyone on our staff this week, like, I'm making the kids shoot, pick up ground balls, pass and catch, and we're trying to be part of the problem, not the solution. And I feel that if things do take a turn, no matter which direction they go, we're still working with kids who are paying for private coaching. They're all going to have to get better at midfield at some point. And we're going to keep harping on that stuff. And we're just going to transition to teaching you guys to be not only good faceoff guys, but good lacrosse players. And I think I'm confident in, you know, my ability, TD's ability, and our ability to kind of educate our staff on what they need to do to make these kids effective, regardless of the rules, regardless of the circumstances, and regardless of what's to come. I think that, you know, no matter what, you have to focus on getting better. And that should be the main goal right now. And that you can't panic. Like you said, it's a conversation. It's not even a proposal. And you just got to stay the course and kind of ride things out like this.
TD, last word to you.
Yeah, it's just, it's, as you said, it's a conversation. It's tough. And you kind of mentioned Ezra Bias. It's tough that you're the position group that gets attacked. So I think that's why everyone kind of hits the panic button. But at the end of the day, is I think the guys who work the hardest, regardless of the rules, and the guys who train smartest and have the best overall game, right, outside of faceoffs. I think one of the biggest things that makes separates the really good college faceoff guys from the rest of the pack, they're all good at 50-50 ground balls. Look at Luke Weirman, right? Look at the guys returning. Look at the guys returning that were all Americans last year. Will Colletti's fantastic at it. They're really good at ground balls. It's being a well-rounded player, not just a faceoff guy. And so there's always a way to adapt. And I think the cream's going to rise to the top no matter what the rules are and how it
goes. Well, fellas, we really thank you for joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast, lending your expertise, and best of luck, as this is game day for both you guys. So we look forward to watching the Firewolves and the Toronto Rock. You're still with the Rock, right, TD?
Yeah, we are up in Canada.
Enjoy, and good luck this evening, and thank you. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Terry. We appreciate it. And to anybody listening, we appreciate you guys as well.
Ditto. Thank you very much.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.